This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
And I'm sure that you will have a number of questions that you'd like to ask. Can I ask Peter and Frank to come and join me at the front so that they can take questions? We do have up to 20 minutes for questions and discussion. If you could just indicate if you'd like to ask a question, and then when invited to do so, if you could give your name and tell us where you're from, and then we'll hopefully be able to continue the debate a little longer. So firstly, any questions to either of the presenters, or more general questions on issues related to the challenges of reform, even beyond the context of these two presentations?
Yeah. I'm Tina Isaacs from the Institute of Education. And it's a question for Peter, but it's actually a more widely ranging question, so I don't actually expect you to answer it. It seemed to me that your presentation was a presentation in two parts. One was about how critical it is for students to progress and achieve and have really good teachers, and that the teacher effect is really rather high for students to progress. Then the other part was about some of the clear problems with teacher assessment, which I think everybody accepts. So my question, which is not really a question, I suppose, is how do we get those two parts to come together a little bit more so that we can use the mileage that you get out of really good teachers to improve teacher assessment?
Well, I'll have a go at answering the non-question, but... well, first of all, I was saying that I think we need to get feedback into the system. It's the feedback loops which must do it, and also that we mustn't be on a kind of horse that's hobby horse that pushes the thing which says, teacher assessment's the answer. It just isn't the answer, and we need to accept that. But I think the broader issue about if we recognise that the teacher is the key to it, what do we do about it as a system? And I'll put two opposing positions on that. One bit that would come, say, from Hanushek on his analysis says that, The Economist, which says that what we need to do is to appoint better teachers to the system. And his calculation shows that if each year you appoint teachers on the 55th rather than the 50th percentile, you're slightly better every year for 10 years, you will help to transform the educational system. Well, maybe that's a good idea. But I'll take another answer from Steve Rowdenbush, who says that working in Chicago and working with schools in very tough areas, that actually we need to get the schools working together and better and the teachers working with each other and learning better. And I think that they present quite different ways of operating. So we do want better teachers, but we do want the system working better, and we need feedbacks into the system. So not an answer, but but some thoughts.
Richard.
Richard Doherty from Cardiff University, and I just want to pick up on the question you asked: is it okay for teachers to assess their own pupils at high stakes exams?
Yeah.
Picks up on what you've just been talking about in a way. And I've got two points I want to put to you. One is that when you're talking about the power relationships, my experience in higher education is that it's when those power relationships are very unequal that the dangers arise. I think there are examples, even within one set, the same department, where there's, for example, an undergraduate module where there's one tutor who has a very big influence on the outcomes of the students learning in that module, as compared with an initial teacher education situation where there may be more than one tutor making judgments on the training teacher's performance. There are mentors in the schools at the same time making judgments. So there isn't a one person who is the key power holder over the judgment. And that's a factor I think we ought to start looking at more generally to overcome the problem of power relationships in this. The second point that I would make is, though I'm sure you would make it yourself in a way, I'm not going to prejudge what you're saying, it's whether it's okay to judge students for high stakes exams, which are high stakes for the teachers as well as for the students. I mean, some of us go back to the origins of GCSE and the design of coursework. I mean, GCSE is a good case study of how not to do coursework design, we should have learned more than we have from doing it badly, alongside doing it well in other subjects and other examining boards. It's a whole mix of experience that we haven't learned from, I would argue. The bad was very bad indeed, and that's what gave Kurt's course for a bad name. But what really changed the life, the future of GCSE coursework was the decision to use it as a high-stakes indicator for schools' judgment of school performance. In the 1980s, as those of us who were around at the time, that wasn't a factor. It wasn't. Yeah. We weren't talking in the same way as we are now about A to C performance. Yeah. It wasn't very important for the teacher and for the school. It's always important for the teacher that his or her own students did well.
Yeah.
But in terms of the pressures from the system and from the school, then high-stakes judgments about the, based on the results of the individual students' performance, were not anything like as influential. I think we could have had a better system, teacher-based assessments within a general context of having exams as well, if only that factor hadn't started to distort what was the behaviour of teachers and schools in relation to those GCSEs. So there's two questions, really. It's about, I wouldn't argue, I've always said, in relation to the national curriculum testing, I think if you really want high-stakes accountability indicators, then don't ask teachers to produce them for you. You've got to have that, I'm sorry. Even though I'm an advocate of teacher assessment, if that's what you want, then don't go to teacher assessment. And we should be sensible about that, and then think about what we want, and then design the system accordingly. But those two points, I'd welcome your comments on. High-stakes for teachers as distinct from high-stakes for students, and the power relationships.
Well, I think your points are well made, and spreading the load rather than concentrating makes a lot of sense, and the appearance in league tables of your own judgments is a nonsense. So I'm not really going to extend that. Just let me add one thing, that in fact the worry is, of course, that the extension continues to exam authorities, exam boards themselves, and that they, the students or the schools, choose the exam according to the pass rates, and that's a corrupting influence in the system, and I'm not quite sure how to deal with that, because I think the diversity is good. I like to see AQA, I like to see CK, that don't want them all doing the same thing. But if you've got pressure to make it a little bit easier to pass this exam or whatever, then that's kind of unhealthy. I think largely that's been resisted, but it's part of it. It's an extension of the same thing that you're saying, although they do appear in league tables on occasions. So.
I'm David Tuffin, an advanced skills teacher from Rochester. I want to come to you really with a question on a sort of day-to-day teacher level. The ideal of getting more teachers into the profession is clearly what we all want. In a school and in an area where we are struggling to find good teachers in core subjects and getting them in, we have an issue of really putting teachers in with the best teachers in with the relevant classes, so deploying teachers effectively. I don't think it's an easy question to answer, but obviously as teachers become more skilled, they then tend to do more GCSE and more A-level teaching. So what tends to happen is your best teachers get deployed higher up the school, where exam results become obviously far more important, let's say, according to the government, not to us. So where do you feel it's best to deploy your best teachers? Is it at the grassroots level in Key Stage 3, where they learn the valuable skills, or is it higher up, where exam results come?
That's a hard question. I think maybe Frank's the better one to answer that one. Let me just think. I'm not going to answer that for secondary. I'm going to just shift it to primary, where I did try to get a handle on that. And the pressure, of course, in a primary school is to put your better teacher into the last year of primary, because that's where your results appear in the league table. But in the analysis that I did on the effect of the teacher and the long-term impact, it was clear that that was greater the younger the child. So if you wanted to impact on children in the long run, you'd be better off putting all your efforts into the earlier years. And of course, that's the one we kind of dismiss, and it's not in the public face. Oh, that question's a local question. It's too hard. I can't
Brent,
do it.
Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Not on that one, but the one before that. Mm. I thought that school-based assessment, teacher assessment in schools, teachers were assessing skills that cannot be tested in an examination. So really, if you lose that, I mean, so you're losing quite a bit. We thought, for example, in chemistry, all right, I mean, you can have the written paper in chemistry, but if there's no practical work, if there's no work with chemicals in schools, what happens? I mean, and if it's happening in the schools, and we think it's important for students, I mean, to acquire skills in practical skills, And that's important for sort of in saying that you know chemistry. Then we need assessment of that also. So it comes from the teachers. The point is that perhaps we reduce the percentage of school-based assessment. I mean, knowing that it's going to be not very reliable, but it's valid. I mean, the validity is quite high, I suppose. So I would go for teacher assessment still in the schools with a small proportion in high stakes examination. That's what I'm talking about.
There's a slightly depressing picture on one level. I'm picking up on the concept from the last lecture of the partial profession that's been constructed because of the input from above that forces teachers to not be part of the whole process of understanding their own professional identity. The two key drivers that seem to be improving schools at the moment are, number one, high quality teaching learning, which is based on assessment for learning, which is founded on the principle of a teacher making a judgment about how a child is doing and helping them to move forward and enabling them to self-reflect so they can move forward as well. And the second one is improved tracking systems, where you identify very quickly over the course of a process whether a child is underachieving against target and intervening differently to try and support improvement, both of which are based on a judgment call made by a teacher. And a lot of your presentation was founded on the principle that's not very strong in teaching professional. I suppose the question is linked back to the first question, which is how do you improve judgment calls within schools in a systematic fashion to improve quality of teacher output?
Well, let me just take the first bit, which was that you said that the improvement that we generally see in schools, it's not clear to me that the standards in our schools of our children's attainment has improved in a dramatic way that is sometimes claimed. It is quite clear that children are getting higher qualifications. There are more people going to universities, there's more people with A-levels, there's far more 5As to Cs, and that jumped up dramatically and continues. So the number of qualifications are clearly rising, and that's very important in the long-term continuation of education. But if we look at the standards of reading in our schools, it has hardly shifted since the 1950s. It's hardly shifted since the 1950s. So if you take into account the slight rise, once you've taken into account the errors made by the standard setting between 1995 and 2000, if you take that out, you still see a slight rise in reading results. But those results are about the results that you get by practicing tests. So actually our reading standards have remained the same, and our math standards have risen a little bit. My God, they were low, and they could certainly go higher. So I think that we have to be careful about that and saying that there's been these big rises. There's more education, and schools are nicer places to be. They're better places. You don't get the tours in Scotland. You don't get the cane in England. And if you ask kids, do you like school, you get amazingly high proportions, especially from younger children. So they've improved in some ways, but it's not a universal improvement. But how to get better feedback into the system, how to get better tracking. And yes, we need to get more education about judgment. We need to get more feedback loops to the teachers about their judgments and more kind of objective data in the classroom so that they can pick that up and so that they can interact. Maybe training on feedback is a way forward, but I say that without good evidence for it. But it's we do need better information in this. I'm for the aim, but not clear about the solution.
Frank, is this something you're looking at in your context, tracking and judgment?
No, we know it's a problem. one method that can be used that we are thinking about is to have group moderation. I mean, we have a system now in our secondary schools, are not just the secondary schools, the primary and secondary schools are grouped in colleges. So we have a college where you can have, well, four, six, let's say, primary schools and four secondary schools, right? So the teachers of these six primary schools can come together at some moment and discuss, let's say, the assessment of English listening or listening comprehension or whatever. I mean, but we haven't started yet. That is an idea. And it could also happen at secondary school level, with which I'm more familiar. I mean, where you can have the teachers of, let's say, English or history or whatever, I mean, coming together and sort of deciding on how to assess particular work, coursework or whatever it is. I don't know how it's going to be done, but anyway, that's the way forward. Teachers learning from other teachers. I mean, Paul Black, I think, mentioned about that this thing this morning. So teachers can learn mostly from their own colleagues, but with the help of somebody who is who knows about assessment, who is familiar with the assessment process.
I just picked that up because I think that's essential to get people together, to get people talking, to get the feedback. But I think you need another loop in the system, and that is, after the moderation, you need to get feedback to the teacher about their judgment and how that corresponds to other teachers' judgments. And that's where I come back to this facets model that I was talking about. So I'll just take an example from Japan, teaching English in higher education. And there you've got to do assessments of the people's English, of the students' English, and then you feed back to them how they're doing. And you find that teachers vary enormously in their judgments, from very severe to very lenient, from very consistent to all over the place. And it's getting that, so to improve that, getting together and talking about it is the beginning, but it isn't the solution. You must get the feedback to the teacher on how they've done in comparison to other people. And so there's a ready-made way of doing this, which is to get one piece of work and then lots of people assess it, and another piece of work and then lots of people assess it, and another people's work. And you do it like that, and you share it round, and there's a natural statistical way of doing it, which allows you to see where the individual is that you've assessed, where the assessor stands and how reliable they are in the severity, and if you've given them all different pieces of things to talk about or different essays to write, you can also put that on the same scale, and that's called a facets model. And there's quite a bit of work on that, and it's that which is difficult to set up, but I think is potentially the extension into the feedback to the teacher that may provide a way. I'm very keen on doing that. If anybody was interested in working on something like that, you know, we've got a kind of system set up ready made to work on that.
Jeff.
Jeff Edwin, I'm an independent consultant. A lot of the teacher assessment I've observed tends to be just a reflection of what often happens in exam or test type situation. And I wonder if it's because when we talk about the teacher assessment can look at the other things the test can't do, in fact they're quite hard to make assessments about. And I think I'm asking the question, what should we be doing to help teachers to make the sort of assessments that are difficult to do, the sort of competency and so on? And we have APP around, which looks to be doing that, but is that sufficient? And should we be doing something else to bring the teachers' experiences, their understandings and so on, into some system which will allow them to make those more difficult assessments?
That's a very good question, and I think we could extend it much outside the ordinary cognitive way of thinking of geography, history and the rest. Just take an example at the moment. Schools are responsible partly for the mental health of their children, as well as a whole range of broad other things. At the moment, there's a very large project called Targeted Mental Health in Schools, in secondary schools, where projects are running to improve the mental health of their children. And as part of that evaluation, working with the Anna Freud Institute, we're collecting data from teachers' assessments of their own children's mental health, which you can't do on a pencil paper test, along with the parents' assessment of it, but also with the students' own self-rated ways. And when you go to older children, you actually find modest agreements between them. But the correlations are only about 0.5. It means there are plenty of kids who are depressed or anxious, even extremely so, who are not picked up by the teachers. They pick up the behaviour problems, but the internalising aspects are not picked up well. And if you go down to primary school teachers, they're almost not picked up at all. And you'll get kids who report being sad and depressed and anxious, and that's unrecognised by their teachers. But these are really important features of those children that you can't pick up in other ways. So that's just kind of one example, but I'm sure you're right, and maybe we need to have a debate about what is reasonable to pick up. And of course, there are other things that some pupils, like the introverted pupil who gets really anxious in the test. Well, the teacher can tell us about that, although we need to watch the bias on it as well. So it's a good point.
I'm afraid we're pretty much out of time, and I'm on strict instructions. Lunch is at 1 o'clock. And could I ask you to say thank you once more to our two presenters this morning? Thank you.